This is WJBC This Week.
I didn't think that the reaction was such that we had deal breakers.
The new controls and oversight that the city wants to implement really defeat the purpose of a private company.
Well, we've decided to not continue the naming rights agreement for the U.S. Cellular Coliseum.
We're about maximizing student learning.
That's a dereliction of duty. That's a failure. Speaker Madigan and his caucus to do their jobs.
There are a lot of ways that we can look at making sure the impact is not reduced just because the dollar amount in this year's United Way campaign was.
The beef got out, jumped over the fence.
Welcome to WJBC This Week, where we look back at the top stories and interviews from the past week. I'm Eric Stock. On this week's program, Bloomington seeks a new management firm for U.S. Cellular Coliseum. We'll hear from the mayor and Central Illinois Arena Management. We get analysis of this week's primary elections in Illinois. An author discusses his book about the misconceptions we have about trailblazers and about procrastination. Plus, we'll catch up with former Illinois State football standout Colton Underwood, who's now a member of the Oakland Raiders. That and more coming up. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Bloomington is starting to negotiate with other management firms after Central Illinois Arena Management, the company which has run U.S. Cellular Coliseum for the decade the venue has been open, announced this week it was leaving the bargaining table as the two sides failed to negotiate a new contract. Siam officials say the city wants too much control over day-to-day operations. WJBC's Dan Sweeney got reaction from Mayor Terry Renner this week.
What was the breaking point for Siam to not want to renew with the city? Were there any particularly big...
You'd have to ask them that. I don't know what that was. But you know, there were some things that we made quite clear, at least 500 feet. You know, and that is, conceptually, we had to protect city. I've made it clear when I ran for mayor, I didn't think this contract that was negotiated a decade ago did a good job of protecting the city. It didn't have performance standards, and we needed to have more transparency. I mean, when I ran for mayor, I said that I wanted us to be the most transparent city that we possibly could be. We've gotten awards for transparency from the Illinois Policy Institute and recognition from others. I could hardly say, well, except for the Coliseum, right? And I do realize that there are some things that maybe how much you make from a Rod Stewart concert or whatever, maybe there are some trade secrets that are necessary, and those are things that we could have talked about. But receipts from concessions and other things, I thought we were still in a negotiating mode. I thought we could work something out. But, you know, at the end of the day, you'd have to ask them why they decided to walk away from the table.
How did they respond when you asked for things like you just said, the audit, the transparency, and things like that? How did they react to that?
Well, usually, of course, unfortunately, this is the way things happen. We have a world, you know, where attorneys often speak, and communicate through attorneys. And so they were certainly, through their attorney, seemed to be resistant and concerned. They didn't seem to indicate that it was a deal breaker. I thought we were going to be able, as I say, to work something out here. And we were trying to communicate where we were coming from, that these were things that we had to insist on. We could maybe work on some of the details, but I had to have an agreement. I had to have a contract that I could look my constituents in the eye and say, I think this is a good agreement moving forward. I had to do that. That's what a good mayor would do. And again, I was optimistic until mid-morning when we found out about this.
Mayor Terry Renner of Bloomington's on the phone with us right now. We're talking about the decision by Central Illinois Arena Management to not renew their contract. There is a question hanging out there, and I've had several texts and emails about this afternoon, about the equipment that is inside the arena and who owns it, and there is part of a clause in a contract that may call for Central Illinois Arena Management to be, I don't even know what the right word is here, reimbursed for that or something. How about the capital?
Well, if they own it, it's theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it might very well be, again, this is what we have to figure out with a management company. A new management company would come in. Would the new management company want to buy their equipment? I don't know that the city would want to necessarily buy the equipment. that's not something that I think we've had a, extensive discussion with the council on. I don't know what the advantages would be. The advantages have to be pretty darn clear, because we have just stabilized our budgetary situation. You know, we've made some cuts in contracts and commodities and overtime. We had a penny sales tax. We have now our fiscal house in order and our pensions funded for the foreseeable future. Unlike most governments, we're in good shape. So if you want us to spend any money, the burden has to be on you. How is this in our benefit for the long term?
Did you, when you went into the negotiations, what was your level of confidence that you were actually going to be able to work out something with SIAM?
I thought it was high, all along. I knew that there were some, that were pushback on some issues, but I didn't think that the reactions were such that we had deal breakers. And again, that's why I was at least mildly surprised about this today.
Will you now, what happens in the next couple of weeks as their contract runs out and the transition begins to be made, what do you see happening with the Coliseum, making sure the house is in order as you get ready to go find another management group?
We already had a meeting this afternoon, about an hour meeting about this. And as we're moving forward, we have more than a couple of weeks. That's between now and April 1st. But that's still not a lot of time. We do have contracts with other management companies, and there are many options. It could be that there is a partial extension of the contract to run or operate some things for 30 or 60 days as part of the transition. And so those are the things that we have to work out. Pretty much everything is on the table. But obviously we're on top of this, and we're going to make sure as much as we possibly can that there are no glitches moving forward.
Is there, I almost look at this kind of as an exit interview time, but will you, as the city, will you do a complete audit and make it available for everybody in town to take a look at? Is that something that's appropriate right now?
Well, by complete audit, anything that we have is subject to internal and external audit, anything that is part of the city of Bloomington. Now, SIAM is an independent contractor. Some of that, that information we have and is subject to audit. And that actually is one of the issues, moving forward, and that we were talking about. What would be subject to a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, and what might not be? So those are things that have to be determined. But in terms of auditing, we have the regular auditing process. We have actually pre-auditing. So before an expenditure is even met, you have to be sure that the money's in the budget and it's for a legal, clear item. And so there's pre-auditing, there's current auditing, post-auditing. That's not of any question here. There were some financials within the Coliseum that the SIAM said were proprietary, and that was something I thought we could work out.
What about what happens now? Where do you go to find another company to do this? How long do you think that's going to take to be able to get somebody in place?
Well, I don't think it. I mean, there are several different types of companies. We have ongoing relationships with companies, and there are certainly people that can come in fairly quickly. We, as I say, want to keep SIAM at the table to say, hey, how about company X might come, but we can work out the logistics better if you stay on for another 30 days. And that's why I'm saying it could be that maybe there's a 30-day extension or a short-term extension of some parts of this as we make the transition. So making a smooth transition is where we go from here. And actually, as I say, we've begun that process of talking with the city manager and staff, legal counsel, moving forward. So we do have several individuals, contractors in mind that we will have approached, will be approaching. And so we will make this happen, right? There's no question. We're going to be on top of this.
That was Bloomington Mayor Terry Renner with Dan Swaney. WJBC's Scott Laughlin got reaction from Central Illinois Arena Management President John Butler.
We did have quite a few meetings over the past several months, and I think it got to the point where, the city has a business plan that they want to implement down at the Coliseum, and the new controls and oversight that the city wants to implement really defeat the purpose of a private company. I really felt the city, with their new business plan, wanted to control 100% of the operation while giving SIAM 100% of the responsibility. So, you know, there were some fundamental decisions and issues that were in play, and I just felt that, you know, based on what we've discussed, that, you know, I just chose not to continue on that basis.
So can you give me some examples of what the city wanted to take over?
Well, there's quite a few, and I don't really want to get into the specifics of the contractor negotiations, but obviously, with the oversight and the new controls that they would want to implement, it would basically establish the city ultimate control of every phase of the operation. And I understand there's accountability. Believe me, I mean, I feel like we've been very transparent over the years with our monthly financial information that we provide to the city and the amount of meetings that we meet on a regular basis. The fact that we have an independent audit each year. For 10 years, we've had a clean audit. We've invited the city to come over anytime they want to review documents, to you know, try to understand some of the complexities that go on with contractual obligations with not only sponsors but with promoters and agents. So we've been very open. However, you know, we fiercely protect the confidentiality of our contracts, especially when we're dealing with promoters and agents. They have written terms and conditions in their contracts where they do not want to release the financial information on their shows. And in order for us to continue to book the type of shows we book, you know, we fiercely protect that. So I know this. I know the city wants to be very transparent as they move forward, and I'm sure that they'll figure it out as they go along. But you know, that's a major issue too as well.
Yeah. So talk a little bit about the promoters and the acts that come in. They want it to remain confidential. Why?
Well, that's an industry standard, and that's just the way that the business operates. We don't create that environment. In order for us to have Live Nation and some of these big promoters that tour the country and North America, tour the world, they have certain terms and conditions in their contracts, just like many sponsorships do, many contracts have. And so for us to keep, you know, to keep us in a position of strength, we have to be very protective of those contracts. We have competitors out there. It's a very, very competitive business. And if you go online and you see what shows are happening in Peoria and Rockford and Springfield and Champaign and other markets, you'll see Bloomington has been the busiest building and the smallest building of any of these competitors. And a lot of it has to do with how we protect the way we do business. Again, you know, we are a shield for the city. We protect the and we hold these contracts so that we're able to negotiate and provide the citizens the best shows that we can possibly have. And obviously our main goal is to show a profit. So, you know, everybody has to understand that the city has the ability to come over anytime they want. They can sit down, they can look at information, they can ask a lot of questions. We just are not going to release that information to be published.
That was U.S. Cellular Coliseum Manager John Butler with Scott Laughlin. Now, the political spotlight will shine on Illinois this week, something that rarely happens during presidential primary elections. But both major party primaries are still somewhat in play heading into Tuesday's elections. Retired political science professor at Illinois State University, Bob Bradley, commented on the races, including the recent poor showing by Republican Marco Rubio, when he talked with WJBC's Scott Laughlin this week.
Some people are kind of mumbling that maybe he'll drop out before Tuesday. What are you hearing down there?
That's part of the word, and Illinois is very important. It's going to be very interesting, the primary in Illinois, because this is one of the few times in recent history that Illinois is going to be perhaps relevant, particularly on the Democratic side. But down here in Florida, we're real relevant, and Tampa's at the end of the I-4 corridor, and the standard political wisdom down here is you have to win the I-4 corridor, which extends basically from Tampa up to Daytona Beach, with Orlando sort of in the middle, that you have to win that to win the state. And right now, Rubio is not doing very well down here. Rubio started too late. I mean, he essentially started his concerted effort to win the presidency less than a week ago down here. And if he wanted to win Florida, he had to start way before that.
So he was.
I think he took Florida a little bit for granted.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like it. Sounds like it. And right now, he trails. He's in fourth place when it comes to delegates. He's behind John Kasich right now. Kasich's got 154. Rubio has 151.
Right. And between the two of them, Kasich is much more likely to win his home state than Rubio is. And if Kasich wins Ohio, that's going to be very interesting to see then how that plays out.
All right, talk about that. Why would it be interesting?
Well, ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, in the general election, the Republicans have to win Ohio to win the presidency. I mean, there's really no ifs, ands, and buts about that. And so if Kasich wins Ohio, that means, doesn't necessarily mean that he'll end up being the nominee, but it means he'll be a major cog in who does. And it means it raises his chances of being included on the ticket, for instance, as a VP. Huge. And so that's why it's important. Ohio, they got to win Ohio. They also really have to win Florida. The Republican candidate in the general election really has to win Florida as well, which is why Rubio is still significant, even if he loses the state, drops out, stuff like that. But ultimately, what ends up happening is Rubio and Bush were, you know, splitting Florida in a lot of ways. And then Trump came in sort of unexpectedly and is doing real well in Florida.
It's all speculating until the deal is done. But if Marco Rubio were to drop out, who does his support end up going to? Who are the Marco Rubio supporters going to go with? Certainly not Donald Trump with the battles they've had, would they?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I was thinking about that right before we went on the air, because I'm anticipating that Rubio is going to drop out. He did really badly last night, and I don't think he can spin that into somehow a victory. I've never seen a person who's finished second or third as often as he does, and he makes it sound like he's won.
Yeah.
But that's not going to happen. And so I would think right now it'd be very, and that's why Kasich is sort of interesting. The guy that he might, or his supporters might go to, would be Kasich.
Really?
Because he doesn't like Trump, and he doesn't like Cruz. I mean, the antipathy between him and Cruz is probably even stronger than it is Trump. And that's hard to imagine, but I think it is.
Wow. It's going to be very interesting. Now, you say Illinois is a player in this time around, especially for the Democrats. Why so? With Hillary with such a big lead with the delegates, why is Illinois going to come into play, do you think, on Tuesday for the Democrats?
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see. The general expectation would be that Hillary would win Illinois easily. But that was sort of the expectation in regard to Michigan not too long ago, and it didn't happen. And regardless of what you think on the Republican side and the circus that is, Hillary has some pretty deep flaws. And it'll be very, and one of the things to pay real attention to in Illinois is how substantial is her support, how solid is it in the African American community. And that's going to be, and particularly in the Chicago area, that's going to be absolutely fascinating. And one of the things that'll come out probably a little bit more as we get closer to March 15th in Illinois is her relationship with Rahm Emanuel. And that's going to be interesting because her relationship with Rahm Emanuel has really had its ups and downs. And the Sanders campaign could really portray that as that she's been very supportive of him. And Rahm Emanuel right now is not on the top list of the most popular mayors in America.
That was retired ISU political science professor Bob Bradley with Scott Laughlin. Today's local news is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Nonconformists are often thought of as risk takers, becoming trailblazers by taking chances that the rest of us would cower from taking. That's not necessarily the case, nor is it always true that procrastination is a bad thing. That according to Wharton Business School researcher Adam Grant, who wrote the book entitled Originals, How Nonconformists Move the World. He talked with WJBC's Steve Fast this week.
Do risk takers have a greater advantage when it comes to finding success?
I think most people believe that they do, but the evidence says otherwise. If you look at entrepreneurs, for example, the ones who hate taking risks are actually more likely to succeed, and the big risk takers tend to gamble in ways that cause their businesses to fail.
Well, you have a number of great examples of people that take the risk, I guess, at the right time. Effective rebellion. When a lot of people think of nonconformists who have made a huge interest in the business world or have made big changes, Steve Jobs comes to mind. But the nonconformist Steve Jobs plays a different role in a story that you write about Apple in the mid-80s. Tell us about Donna Dubinsky.
Donna is a manager a couple levels below Steve, and she has an idea for trying to make the distribution system for Apple computers more efficient. And Steve ends up disagreeing with her and arguing a lot, and they eventually get into a pretty nasty debate. And finally, she issues an ultimatum and says, look, if you don't do this my way, then I'm going to walk. And she ends up getting a month to do an investigation and come up with a new proposal. And she successfully challenges Steve Jobs. Ultimately, the issues fade away, and yeah, there's a different direction for distribution altogether. She's able to reinvent it. And the Mac team ends up giving an award for the person who most successfully challenges Steve Jobs, and obviously she's one of those people. And every time, that person gets promoted. So even though he might have been tough, critical, ornery, and sometimes unpleasant, he seriously valued people who are willing to challenge his assumptions and ideas.
And that is what's interesting. It is not just the people that are single-minded, as you say, that find success. It's people that have to have that interaction. The interesting thing about many of the nonconformists that you write about is that they aren't single-minded. In fact, some of them find ways to be distracted and engaged, have other interests, and take them away from that single-minded way of thinking.
Yeah, I was surprised to find that some of the most original people throughout history have been great procrastinators. Da Vinci, for example, spent 16 years dabbling on the Mona Lisa, and he was interested in finishing the painting, but really struggled to stay focused. He kept getting distracted by, you know, curiosity about running experiments with optics. And this drove him crazy. He wrote in his notebook repeatedly, tell me if anything ever was done. And he felt like a failure. What he didn't realize was these other things that he was doing based on curiosity made him a better painter. So the optics experiments he ran led him to new ways of modeling light and gave him the path to becoming the ultimate Renaissance man. We see Martin Luther King Jr. too. Only started working on his greatest speech a few days before the March on Washington. The night before, he stayed up past 4 a.m. reworking the entire thing. He's sitting on stage waiting for his turn to speak, and he's still scribbling lines and crossing out some of his words. And because he doesn't have this script set in stone, 11 minutes in, he ends up deviating from the plan and improvising to say four words that were not written in his draft, which were, I had a dream. And I think you can make a case that by procrastinating, he left himself the greatest amount of time to access new ideas. And he also kept himself flexible to speak in a way that probably could not have been perfectly planned.
What's the difference between originality and creativity when it comes to these people that you write about?
I think originality is about what happens after you have an idea. Originals are people who generate new ideas, but more than that, they're people who take initiative to bring their visions into reality.
One of the things that you point out, again, is you can sort of tell the tendencies of people that have, I guess you would say, this degree of effective nonconformity. And you point to a study that indicated that what web browser a person uses is an indicator of their job performance. Explain this.
Yes, some people don't like the results of this study, but this economist, Michael Hausman, has shown that if you use Safari or Internet Explorer, on average, your job performance is lower than if you use Chrome or Firefox. And I was curious about why. Is it a technical advantage? You know, do people with more computer knowledge end up using Chrome and Firefox? When Mike ran the data, he found that there was no difference between the browser groups in how fast they could type or how much they knew about computers. What it comes down to is how you got the browser. If you use Internet Explorer or Safari, those came pre-installed on your computer, and you just accepted the default that was handed to you. If you want Chrome or Firefox, you have to stop and ask, is there a better browser out there? And take a tiny bit of initiative to, if not upgrade, at least change what was given to you. So a lot of people hear about this research and they say, if I want to get better at my job, I just need to download Firefox. No, it's about being the kind of person who takes that initiative to update your browser.
So it probably wouldn't be the person that follows the instructions that you should always use Firefox.
Probably not. Yeah, you have to reject this suggestion too.
There are a lot of surprising things that you've found and present in this book. And another one is that you say that procrastination, maybe that Martin Luther King speech is a good example, but procrastination is not necessarily an enemy of productivity. It can be a valuable resource for creativity.
Yeah. So after these examples came to light, I had a student who was curious about whether procrastinating can make you more creative. And yeah, I'm the opposite of a procrastinator. I'm a precrastinator. This is an actual term to describe somebody who dives into tasks early and finishes them ahead of schedule. When I have a presentation to give in 8 months, I will wake up tomorrow morning in a cold sweat that it's not done yet. And progress for me is like oxygen. But the student, Jihei Shin, said, you know, I have my most creative ideas when I'm procrastinating. And at first I thought, well, that's cute. Now, where are the four papers you owe me? No, in all seriousness, she was one of our most creative students. And I said, look, we're social scientists. This is what we do. Test the idea. So she went into a bunch of companies. She had people fill out a survey about how often they procrastinated. And then she got their bosses to rate how creative and innovative they were. And sure enough, the precrastinators who did things early and finished them ahead were rated as less creative than people who admitted that sometimes they procrastinated. And I wanted to know what happened to the people who procrastinate a lot. She's like, I don't know. They didn't fill out my survey. But eventually, we found that there was this nice curvilinear relationship where some procrastination was better than none or a lot. And we then went into the lab to design some experiments to see if procrastination could really cause creativity. And sure enough, when we asked people to come up with new business ideas, when they started the task right away, they were rated as 28% less creative than when they were told about the task and then given a chance to procrastinate by playing Minesweeper. And what happened was, it wasn't that Minesweeper itself made them more creative, but rather, once they heard about the task and then kind of put it off, it was still active in the back of their mind while they were playing games. And that gave them time to incubate and encourage more divergent and nonlinear thinking, and it prevented them from rushing forward with their first, most obvious conventional ideas. So maybe there's something to this idea of delaying the start or finish of a task to make sure that you have all the original ideas at your disposal.
So it's not that they worked so well under the pressure towards the end. It's that they had more time to, I guess, develop more creative thought then.
Yeah, that's right. So I think as a writer, one of the things I've discovered is when I get excited about an idea, instead of sitting down at the computer right away, if I delay it for a couple of days, I'm much more likely to have a bunch of new ideas to consider. And the same goes for stopping writing in mid-sentence, which is agonizing. But instead of finishing a complete thought, if you leave it incomplete, you come back to it a week or two later, you have fresh perspectives to bring to the table, and you also have enough distance to wonder, who wrote this garbage?
Am I learning then, Adam, that as you are working forward, you are now planning to procrastinate?
Yeah, I actually set a goal of procrastinating more. And as you know, somebody who likes structure and discipline, I then made a to-do list for the steps to procrastinate. And then I basically set about trying to achieve the goal of not making progress toward my goals, which was great fun. But you know, I think you have to be careful, obviously, because if you wait until the very last minute, then you know you just end up in a panic and implement your easiest ideas as opposed to really having the time to work out the most creative. And I think Aaron Sorkin put it best. You probably know his work from The West Wing or the Steve Jobs movie. He said, you call it procrastinating, I call it thinking.
That was author Adam Grant with Steve Fast. Former Illinois State Redbird and current Oakland Raider Colton Underwood is spending some time back home as the Washington, Illinois native gears up for his third NFL season. He has some charity work planned and a youth football camp as well. He talked with WJBC's Scott Laughlin this week.
Your first experience in the NFL?
You know, it was a lot different than what I thought it was going to be, and I don't mean that in a bad way. But it was a learning experience, and, you know, I was faced with some adversity in my first 2 years and last year coming off of an injury, something that I wasn't as familiar with in my career. But it's helped me grow as a player and as a person. And it's something that I'm going to value and I'm going to get better from. So, you know, I really learned an appreciation for the game. Not that I didn't have one, but it took it to the next level with facing some of that adversity.
And I'll ask you a question. I know the answer, but I'll ask anyway. The biggest difference from college to the NFL when it comes to the people that are around you?
Athletic ability. You're going to hear it. Speed.
Yeah, that's all we hear. It's just so much faster.
It's not even. You're not only talking the physical speed. You're talking mentally. They know where you're going or, you know, pre-snap reads. You know, these quarterbacks are some of the smartest people, you know, on the planet just by figuring it out, especially in the game. You know, you're talking, you know, obviously the likes of Peyton Manning and in our division alone, you know, Derek Carr, Phillip Rivers, they know what's going on before the play even happens. Whereas you might be able to sneak one past a Missouri Valley quarterback here and there. You can't get away with that in the NFL.
Wow. And, have you ever watched the show on HBO Hard Knocks?
I have.
Did you watch it? Because that's all I know about that part of football, but it seems
right.
Pretty real. They try to throw a little drama in there.
It's very accurate, and a lot of the things they depict, you know, it's raw emotions. You get to, you know, see where, you know, you don't get to see that on social media, the raw emotions of the players, the coaches. And, you know, believe it or not, it's hard on the players. You could see in some of those episodes, it's hard for some of the coaches to let those good guys go, but you know, that's the business we're in.
Talking with Colton Underwood, former Redbird, now with the Oakland Raiders.
When we got there, we didn't feel like underdogs. And you could tell with the number of players that are now currently in the NFL, you know, James O'Shaughnessy, Cam Meredith, who made it as an undrafted, which I was extremely happy to see, Michael Lidke. You know, the list is growing. You got Marshawn that's hopefully going to be, yeah, you know, a first, three rounds draft pick here coming up. So, it's a very exciting time for the Illinois State football program.
So you start out with San Diego. And tell me about how you ended up leaving San Diego. How'd that come about?
In the fourth preseason game against the 49ers, I actually tore my hamstring. So I decided it would be the best thing for my career to leave there and rehab, get better. And it worked out. I signed with Oakland. I think it was week 12, week 13. I missed, you know, a lot of the season. But like I said, the time off and the time away sort of helped me grow a different angle of appreciation for the game.
And was it at Oakland where you learned to play dirty?
I can't speak on that now.
All right, Colton, talk about the camps you've got coming up here and the dinner party beforehand.
Yeah, so something new, like what you just mentioned, something new this year is going to be that dinner gala. I think we're going to call it the Legacy Gala. You know, based off of my foundation, the Colton Underwood Legacy Foundation, that benefits cystic fibrosis through youth participation in youth athletics. So it goes hand in hand for me. Cystic fibrosis is really important to me because my little cousin Harper was diagnosed with CF at birth. So I always said if I ever reached a platform where I could help children with CF or people with CF, I'm going to. And that's exactly why I started this foundation. And it goes hand in hand with my camp, like you said. And, you know, the camp this year is on June 25th, and the dinner is going to be on June 24th at the Paradise Casino.
All right. Is the camp full, or do you have slots for more?
I haven't even opened up the registration for
camp yet.
Last year was my first year doing it. We opened up to 400 kids thinking that would be enough, and it actually filled up in 4 hours. So I had to shut my website down. We had an hour later, we had a waiting list of 200 kids. So it's taken off, and it has a life of its own here in Central Illinois, which is unbelievable. Unfortunately, this year I'm still keeping the number at 400 on the website. So mark your calendars
it manageable.
And get in.
So when will that website open up for?
It will open up at 8 a.m. on April 4th for first through fourth graders, and April 5th through fifth through eighth graders at 8 a.m. as well.
All right, April 4th for first through fourth graders, April 5th for fifth through
eighth graders.
Yep. All right. And what do you teach a first grader?
Well, I don't know if you teach him a lot, but he's out there on the field with the NFL guys and his buddies, and that's all that matters. You know, I had a couple parents come up to me and said, you know, and say that their kids could have just ran around on that field for 3 hours and had the same amount of fun, which, you know, it might not be true, you know. Just spending the time with the kids and watching the smiles on their faces and competing and, you know, trying to show them what we've learned from the game. It's amazing.
Who's going to be helping you? Anybody we would know?
Well, last year I had about 13 NFL guys there. This year I can't make any commitments on any names, just because, you know, something could come up at the last minute. But there will be, hopefully with my brother entering into the draft this year too, hopefully we're going to get close to 20.
So you're talking about you have each other's back. And is this one of the ways? I mean, will you volunteer for somebody else's camp?
Yeah,
you spend a lot of time doing
Nate
camps?
Nate called me. Nate Palmer up in Green Bay called me the other day. I'm going to go up to one of his bowling events. And that's just how it goes. You know, if someone picks up the phone and needs you at an event, you go to it if you can, if you're available. And I appreciate everybody who came to my event last year. It was awesome.
That was former Illinois State football standout Colton Underwood with Scott Laughlin. The Weekend News is next. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Time now for the Weekend News. Unit 5 is expected to vote this week on new school start times. Superintendent Mark Daniel made recommendations to the Board of Education, which would mean elementary schools start at 7:45 in the morning, high schools at 8:30, and the junior highs at 8:45.
After we truly analyzed the three-tier versus the two-tier, what was the cost-effectiveness factor? The fact that we have an extremely large district, what is the most efficient use of our busing, our buses, so the wear and tear on those, and so on and so forth.
Daniel says another factor in the decision is research indicating elementary students learn better in the morning than in the afternoon. As the management contract expires for U.S. Cellular Coliseum, so are the naming rights for the building. U.S. Cellular spokesperson Katie Fry says the 10-year contract is up.
Well, we've decided to not continue the naming rights agreement for the U.S. Cellular Coliseum. When the current agreement ends on March 31st, we'll no longer have naming rights to the building.
U.S. Cellular pulled service from the area in 2012, selling its towers to Sprint. U.S. Cellular was paying $1.75 million for the naming rights. The annual United Way campaign in McLean County brought in $3.5 million this year, a decrease of about $700,000 from last year. That also fell short of the campaign's goal to increase donations by 8% this year. Co-chair Scott Preston still calls the effort a success.
It's always great to see that once again McLean County comes together, supports the causes and the initiatives that are important to our community here right at home. And though that number is not as large as we had hoped, there's a lot of ways that we can have impact collectively in our community in solving problems.
Preston says more than 4,000 volunteer hours were logged during the campaign. He also notes 14 organizations held campaigns for the first time this year. Congressman Rodney Davis is fuming over FEMA's rejection of disaster relief for nearly two dozen central Illinois counties, which experienced heavy flooding this winter.
And that is a travesty because FEMA could be using the language that I just passed that would allow more localized impacts to be taken into consideration to get assistance.
That measure, which passed the House last month, still awaits a vote in the Senate. FEMA's denial was expected because the damage estimate of $15 million is still short of the $18.1 million threshold. Illinois' Emergency Management Agency director plans to gather more information from the affected communities before seeing if an appeal would be worthwhile. Governor Rauner is upset that the Illinois House won't be meeting again until next month. Rauner held a news conference and made it clear he thinks House Speaker Mike Madigan should be in Springfield.
That's a dereliction of duty. That's a failure of Speaker Madigan and his caucus to do their jobs. We're in the middle of a budget crisis. We're in the middle of a higher education funding crisis. We're in the middle of a MAP grant funding crisis. And they leave town with no solutions.
Rauner can bring the House back if he wants by issuing a special session, but he notes that when past governors have done that, little has been accomplished. Lawmakers generally are off around the Easter holiday. The Senate's slated to be in session next week for 3 days. And an incident in South Bloomington on Friday had the staff at Bloomington Meats asking, "Where's the beef?" A determined cow made it all the way from the meat shop on Bun Street to South Main during the morning commute. Debbie Lesher of Bloomington Meats tells WJVC the cow took off while being unloaded from a trailer. He ran to an apartment complex on Tracy Drive. Lesher says it has happened before.
Yes, it has. Usually they go to the trailer court, but that's been, oh, I'll bet 5 or 6 years ago, the last time we had somebody get loose or something get loose. But it's not a very, we handle beef 3 times a week, and it's very rare.
The bovine damaged a vehicle and charged an officer, but no one was injured. Up next, the week to come. This is WJBC This Week. Welcome back to WJBC This Week. Now we take a look ahead at the week to come. On Monday, Bloomington's City Council will consider a redevelopment agreement for the Colonial Plaza Shopping Center. Tuesday is primary election day in Illinois. WJBC will have live election results on air and online after the polls close. Also Tuesday, the McLean County Board is expected to appoint a new member following the departure of Paul Finch last month. On Wednesday night, Unit 5 will hold a special board meeting at Parkside Junior High to consider its proposal to change school start times. On Wednesday and Thursday, Connect Transit will hold 2 listening sessions about its proposed route changes. Wednesday night at the United Way and McLean County office in Bloomington. Thursday night at Normal Public Library. Thursday is the annual McLean County Agriculture Awareness Breakfast. And on Thursday and Friday, Illinois State University will be hosting a mini-conference on race and justice. This has been WJBC This Week. To listen to this week's program again, go to the WJBC.com podcast page. I'm Eric Stott.